Hey everyone, welcome back. I know it's been a long hiatus from the last episode. Of course, I'm joking, but welcome back to the Marketer Pitch Podcast. I am one half of your host, Corey Davis, and I'm joined by the lovely Yesenia Reynoso.
Hello, everybody. It's me. I'm back after my latest sleeping adventure.
Yes. But more importantly, welcome back to the second half of our doubleheader Thanksgiving episode. And again, just like Yesenia said, the last episode in volume two, we really just wanted to just spend this holiday giving thanks to our listeners for tuning in for the past two seasons faithfully. And to reward that, we're giving you double the content, double the discussion, double the everything, because you know we're just excited to just continue to engage with you guys.
Absolutely. And we're just so excited to bring these topics to you at the forefront, especially given that it's the Thanksgiving holiday. You're going to have twice as much time to listen to all of the extraordinary debates and highlights that we're going to be giving you. And so we're so happy that you'll be joining us not only for volume 26, but now volume 27. And so thank you all to the Marketer Pitch community. And again, you can access this episode as well as the rest of season 3, season 2, season 1, and freestyle across major podcast mediums, YouTube, and Thursday mornings on the Helium Radio Network. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Marketer Pitch.
Yep. So since you see and I got into the intros and announcements the last episode, I'm going to spare you a little bit and so we can get straight into some lively content. And today we are, of course, discussing what seems like what the whole world is actually talking about right now, literally the whole world. And you're going to agree with me when I get into it. But as always, we will continue with the same format that we did the last episode and every other episode. And that's first up, we're going to have the appetizer where Yesenia will share with us an interesting article or news from the past week that, you know, I may have missed, you've missed. And then followed by that, we're going to get into our entree, which is going to be a very, very hot topic. And I know usually we say, like, you know, if we have time for dessert or we don't have time, but we're saving time for dessert. It's Thanksgiving, and damn it, we're saving time for dessert today. Because, and I'm going to spoil it a little bit and to give you what our topic of for dessert is. And then just given the craziness of the world, Yesenia, I really just want to spend a few moments during the dessert segment to give our listeners two things that you've been most thankful for all year. One is personal, you know, what you've been personally thankful for. And then one, just make it fun. It could be funny, your personal life. It could be fun, silly, but make it fun. So, aww. So just start brainstorming now. But I really just want to end this episode on a great note.
Now, that is a wonderful way for us to not only start, but also finish our episode. And yes, we will not be denied with the dessert. Now I'm even more eager to get to that dessert round.
Yes. So given the hot taste of the show today, similar to the last episode, we just encourage you guys to email, comment, DM us on Instagram, or tweet, hint us your thoughts. And even if you don't agree with us, like, again, we love to just hear different opinions. I may learn something that I've never even thought about. So please just let us know. And you don't have to be in the United States. You can be all over the world. And please just comment if you can. But today I'm very curious to hear about this topic from you guys and hear about what your thoughts are. So, Yesenia, are you ready to get into the second half of our doubleheader episode?
I am, my friend. Let's do it.
Okay. So for the appetizer, I'm passing it right back to you because I know we have a topic to discuss.
Yes, absolutely. And this particular topic, I ended up stumbling upon my LinkedIn feed last night. And I thought this kind of brings the whole thing to perspective for me as a Hispanic woman and as well as for the Latino community. And again, it's not only the Latino community, but also communities from all ethnic backgrounds who feel that it is important for us to be properly and rightfully represented across all major media mediums. And so thanks to this individual who posted it up on the LinkedIn feed, Refinery29 recently published an article about the success of Black Panther Wakanda Forever. And this particular article focuses on the anti-hero or villain Namor. And the article centers around about not only what Namor stands for, but also the importance of Black and Indigenous representation. With the title called With Namor, Wakanda Forever Does What Latin Media Will Not. And the article goes deep, very much in depth as to why the Latino media, whether it's within the U.S. and across Latin America, have not been able to properly address the lack of presentation among Black and Indigenous Latinos. And so I'll give you a sneak peek as to what the article is about. Again, you can access it on refinery29.com. Tecno's Huerta Mejia is soaring. Since starting in the superhero epic Black Panther Wakanda Forever, the Mexican actor has been trending for Dancing with Lupita Nyong'o and going viral for his critique in Latin representation in media. In Latin America, especially Mexico, we have a lack of representation. If you turn on the TV, all the people are white. Mexico looks like the TV like a Scandinavian country, he said in an interview with NBC News, and he's not wrong. Portrayals of Latinos, both in Latin America and in the United States, are overwhelmingly and violently white. This is by design. For generations, entertainment media has invisibilized or invisible and or stereotyped Black and Indigenous people with origins across Latin America, just as it's Spanish and Mesito, can't even pronounce the word, but it's M-E-S-T-I-Z-O, white supremacist leaders have done in this region throughout history. This is why seeing the brown skin Huerta playing a Mayan-inspired anti-hero is so powerful. And it's also why it's not surprising to me that it took the U.S. Black entertainment, not the Latin media, to tell dignified stories of indigeneity in a major motion picture. And so just by looking at, you know, at what Tecno's Huerta and as well as the incredible cast, the Latino cast of Black Panther has done, it has finally brought to light not only the reemergence, I should say, they've always been there, but the reemergence of storytelling among Black and Indigenous people, but it also once again re-centers the focus on the colorism, the colonialism, and the racism that has equally impacted and affected Latin America just as much as it has affected in the United States and as well as worldwide, and why it is important for us to confront those demons in order for us to build the bridges and finally deliver on the representation, equality, and equity across all accounts. And Corey, I want to bring you in and get your thoughts on this. You know, like I said, as a Hispanic woman, this article really resonated with me because as someone who advocates equality and equity, I think it's incredibly important for stories across all backgrounds being properly told through the mediums that are either there or will soon make its appearance.
Yes, and obviously, I am not Hispanic or Latino, so I can't fully understand or grasp this conversation. But I know what's right, I know what's wrong, and I thought the casting of this was genius. And it's something that, and I give you my own ignorance background. And this is because of how fair skin or white Latinos have really dominated the culture is. You know, growing up was when you looked at Telemundo, Univision, and just Latin movies and television, you assumed that all Hispanics looked like that. And if you go after the majority of Americans, when they think of a Latino or Latina, they're looking at somebody who's fair-skinned, has a brunette hair, maybe have like, you know, brown eyes, but not looking at somebody who could be a darker-skinned person, somebody who have more of a hue that's similar to African Americans in this country. So because of that, we have a warped viewpoint of what makes up Hispanics. in Latinos and Latinas because of that portrayal. So I find it very shocking, and I find it very disheartening that there's some you know, fair-skinned Latinos and Latinas who do not like this portrayal, who are thinking that this is maybe because it's going to cause more of a divide instead of speaking to the true issue, and that's colorism. And I would say it's you know, it's sad that it's taking an American film to really address the issue of colorism versus that's made by a Black man versus if you look at last year, if you remember, and for help me forgetting the name, with Lin-Manuel Miranda, what was the movie? In the Heights. Look at In the Heights, it was the exact opposite. It was a Hispanic male who created a film that had only fair-skinned Latinos.
Yeah,
so I think it's a very interesting debate because, you know, I think this is something that needs to be addressed. I, as a Black man, can address it. I know there's colorism in Black culture. It's obviously not as strong, it's not as entrenched as it is in, you know, in Latino and Latina culture, but I think it's something that should be addressed and something that should be debated on. And I'm glad that the media and these articles are really calling it out and talking about it.
It must be called out, Corey, because we have seen it in history, especially among the Latino culture. Colorism and discrimination are very much, not only in the past, but still to this present day, a very big problem within the Latino community. Latinos who identified as having a darker skin color face discrimination from other Americans, including other Latinos. So what does that tell you? What it tells us is that for many, you know, for decades, colonialism and that is mixed in with racism and also pay, which is also was intricated and planted through imperialism, paved the way for these sentiments and stereotyping to arise. It is as if that being light means more privileges, more power, more influence, and so forth. And I think it's really, you know, it's really important, and again, for Latinos, especially those within the Black and Indigenous realms, learning how to be Black or Indigenous within an anti world is something that they have to confront with every single day. It's if you've seen it across all the major mainstream media, TV shows, entertainment, and so forth, the majority of them are overwhelmingly white. It's thin. And so that has been that has always been the assumption until recently. And Latinos need to confront their own racism. That is a definite fact. Just like the way the white demographic has to confront his own racism due to some of the atrocities they have committed in the past, Latinos are the same way. We have to confront our own racism and have these difficult conversations and acknowledge that that we have been racist and also displayed implicit bias and discriminatory actions on our own behalf. And we need to learn from that, acknowledge, and also figure out ways to how can this not be repeated again? How do we further open these spaces and have these conversations? Because Afro-Latino activists like from Joan Smalls to political organizers and scholars say that the push for Black Lives Matter and racial justice needs to be constant and persistent. And it has to, and it should not turn off on the dock that easily. It should be a subject that should be continuously discussed and continue being pushed forward across all major avenues, because this is a subject that will not go away until the community confronts it.
Yes, and thank you for bringing this to light. And you know, I we have to put a pin on this one, unfortunately, but I do want to have an episode dedicated talking specifically about representation in the media and colorism and going more into this, because I think it's a lot there. It's a lot that, you know, society, we really need to start confronting and addressing.
Absolutely, my friend. And we will definitely have that episode down the road. So keep tabs across our mediums to learn more.
Thank you. And thank you for that again. So now we put a pin on the appetizer. We're going to get to the entree, what I know we all have been waiting for and what everyone has been discussing, and literally everyone, and that is Twitter, or the possible demolition of a social platform happening in real time before our eyes. So, to refresh your memories, in late October, Elon Musk completed, the billionaire Elon Musk, Tesla owner Elon Musk, SpaceX owner Elon Musk, completed his deal to buy Twitter for $44 billion. And then immediately, unfortunately, laid off half of the 6,000 plus employees. So within days, auto companies, the big ones, pulled out of advertising on Twitter right after he bought it. GM said, we're done. Ford said, not happening. Audi said, get lost, Elon. And Mondelez, which we know as Oreo, who makes the Oreo maker. And they're actually one of Twitter's longest standing and biggest marketing partners, said, we are done. So not only that, not only did brands say, like, put your hand up and say, get me out of here. A lot of the top ad agencies have said that as well. So IPG Media Brands, which is one of the top four ad companies in the world, they had an internal memo that got leaked, but immediately they told all their clients and all their agencies that they should pause on Twitter for right now, just because of the volatility of it and because of Musk's recklessness of how he's running it so far. And then after that, WPP, Group M, and the other brands started following suit. And this backlash hasn't been seen since, if you guys recall, on Facebook when a lot of because of the misinformation or the disinformation, a lot of advertisers boycotting it because they didn't want to be associated with a lot of Facebook in 2020. But this is probably the biggest, even more so, pullout of advertisers since that moment. So not only did that happen immediately, it took Elon by surprise. And he warned that Twitter could face bankruptcy. And I quote, this is what Elon said, due to a massive drop in revenue because of activist groups pressuring advertisers. If you recall in episode 2, when Yesenia just said how the right wing took the word woke and they bastardize it, Elon just continuing with that when he's saying that they're pressuring advertisers. Activist group pushing advertisers. That does not mean anything because I don't know, the activist group didn't do anything.
Oh my God.
So beyond that being ridiculous to say, more critically, Elon fired half of the Twitter trust and safety team, which is actually responsible for their monitoring disinformation and more importantly, fraud on the platform, which if those in a check, that's very scary to advertisers. To realize if they don't know which content they're going to be running around or who they're going to be running their advertising around next to. So now the Twitter Blue fiasco, which if people recall, which Elon said, hey, great idea. We don't need advertising advertisers. We're just going to pay $8 a month for people to get a little blue check mark next to their name. Let's roll it out immediately. A smart person, strategic person would think through the pros and the cons of that. Mm-hmm. Immediately, they rolled it out, and then it came with people impersonating brands. It became with people saying that for, I believe it was Lockheed Martin, who is a defense company, saying they're going to stop giving production on flights and stop making bombs. There was Lilly, which someone impersonated them, saying they're going to start giving away their drugs for free. And then people also were impersonating celebrities, athletes. LeBron James, fake LeBron James announced that he was retiring. So there's all these different things that people were initially impersonated because of this subscription service. They retook it back and they realized it wasn't the smartest thing to do. And now coming out of this week, the reinstatement of Donald Trump on Twitter, Kanye West on Twitter.
Yep.
And now with half the advertising team gone, where does our little blue bird friend go from here? So, Yesenia, I want to get your thoughts on all of this, what happened. But before I do, I do want to note, because I did say the $8 a month thing wasn't cutting it, because advertising is critical to Twitter. So if you guys did not know, 92% of Twitter's revenue this year so far has become from advertisers. 92% of their revenue. So without advertisers, this company won't even say Christmas Day. So you're sitting there. I talked enough, but step in. What are your thoughts?
I just want to, I've been laughing internally and externally ever since the Elon Musk announcement became official. And the fact that you said 92% of all of Twitter's revenue comes from advertisement tells you right then and there that they eliminated their primary economic avenue. It pretty much tells you all you need to know about Twitter's dwindling, heading down to irrelevance. I call this the Twitter massacre because that's what we're seeing in front of our very eyes. Just picture this, because I saw this trending on Twitter and it's deemed appropriate. Do you know my favorite movie is Titanic? Do you remember the scene where the group of violinists, they ended up saying goodbye to one another and started to drift off as the ship started to sink? And then the one violinist started to play.
Yep.
Yep. And then the rest of them came back and then they started to play that music. And then it was and it became so symbolic, because as they started to play the music, the reality started to set in that the ship was sinking. There was no point in saving it. And I think it is the perfect analogy to Twitter. I think no matter what Elon Musk does with the platform, it's going to sink. I think we are witnessing the final final months or days, whatever it is, but we are entering into the final stages of what we've known and loved in Twitter's eventual sinking down to oblivion.
And really, and I agree, I'm laughing because it really shows how much of an idiot Elon Musk is.
He's an idiot.
And it goes to show you, being a billionaire, having money does not create intelligence. Similar to Donald Trump, Elon Musk is a spoiled rich kid who happens to give him money. Yes, he has very great ideas. Yeah. I'll give him credit. Tesla was very smart. SpaceX is very smart. Yeah. But just because you have smart ideas does not make you a successful businessman.
Absolutely.
He bought this for $44 billion and is literally going to lose all of his money within 2 months, she shows you what an idiot he is.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. He just he spent $44 billion on a platform that over the last several years has been plagued in controversies and boiled in misinformation, disinformation, and many other controversies. Twitter was already heading down the path of Facebook. But now that Elon Musk decided to, because this was his way of entering into, again, the identity politics charade and further inflame stupidity. And please, if you want to, please listen to the previous episode when I talk about identity politics and how stupid and toxic it is to try to anger the others. This stupid is tribal politics. But from a business, from a business standpoint, Twitter, which has been well known among brands, now faces an uncertain future, because if there is no regulation, if there is no strategic planning, there is no direct financial avenue for brands to make profit and as well as share messaging, then why are they going to use the platform? There is no reason for them to utilize it in their marketing communications plans. Might as well just put it down the drain, just as well as Elon Musk.
Yes, and you know what, I have a few more thoughts on this one, but I already know we're gonna be talking about Twitter again before the season is out, because Elon Musk literally every single week, by the time this episode comes out, this episode may be outdated. He tops himself every episode. So.
Oh, he does. No doubt about it, Corey. We're definitely going to keep talking about this. We're witnessing the end of Twitter before our very eyes. So keep tabs on marketing or pitch, because this topic is definitely not going away. Not going away soon. We will talk about this again.
Yes. So with that, I need to put a pin on this episode, because again, as promised, I really want to get into the dessert segment. But, you know, I want to thank you guys all again for just listening to our lively debate. And again, please reach out to us. We want to hear from you. Tweet us. Elon, if you're listening, please tweet me. Exactly.
give us your perspective. He'll probably ban us.
probably. Give us your perspective on why we're wrong. Or maybe if you agree with the things, certain things we say, let us know too. So all feedback is good feedback. That's how I take it.
Yeah.
But now as mentioned, let's move on to the dessert segment where I want both of us, Yesenia, to just give two things, one fun, one serious, or not serious, personal, that we've been thankful for in 2022. So have you thought of yours? If not, I can go first.
No, I've thought of mine.
Okay.
I thought about it long and hard, so I will offer my deed. I think I'm thankful from like on the, you know, on the personal slash professional front. I'm very happy as to that my career in both the corporate and entrepreneurial worlds are finally taking shape. I'm happy to see my thought leadership brand grow in 2022 and will continue to grow. I'm very happy to see the contributions that I've done in both the corporate and entrepreneurial circles continue to further grow. I'm happy that I during 2022 ended up landing a new career opportunity in the corporate world, and so I'm very happy about that. And I'm also happy to see strides on the entrepreneurial side taking shape, and I'm very much excited to see what the future holds on that front, because there's so many things on the rise for me that I'm very excited about, and I can't wait to share it with all of you in due time. So that's one thing that I'm thankful for. The other one is a fun one. I went to Hawaii earlier this year, and it was my first ever time in that state, and it was absolutely gorgeous. I had so much fun despite some minor setbacks, but overall I had such a wonderful time, and it not only further re-emphasized my love for travel, but it also made me realize my purpose as a communicator and storyteller. One of the highlights that I've had in the trip was the luau that I went at the Disney Ohlone, and when I saw the Hawaiian performers tell their story about Hawaii, it really touched a special place in my heart, made me emotional, and further reiterated the importance of telling stories in a way that's authentic, genuine, and making connections towards either a universal or targeted audience. And so that is you know, something that I am grateful for, and as well as all of the other key, you know, the key basics: family, health, friends, and so forth.
I love that. That's like, if I give snaps, everyone can hear that I'm snapping right now. I love that.
Snap, snap, snap. 1, 2, 1, 2. And what about you, my friend? What are you thankful for?
So on a personal note, I am thankful for growth. I have, this year, 2022, I think I've grown 50 years. I feel like I finally come into my own. I finally have realized the things that I want out of life. I finally have gotten to a great place financially. I've gotten to a great place with my job. I have a great place with personal relationships. And I'm just really proud of the person that I've developed into. So I would say, you know, even though that has a few challenges and things like that, 2022 has probably, so far, has been one of the greatest years of my life. And I'm so thankful for it.
Yay! That is so beautiful, my friend. I'm like, tears are starting to flow down. I'm like, I'm so happy.
So thank you. And then really quickly, just to end on it, and on a fun one, it's kind of cheesy, but one of the things that I'm thankful for is I started a garden back in February of 2022 in my backyard. I had no idea what I was doing. Never planted anything. I kill houseplants that they said you can't kill. So I started it, and it's been pretty successful at it. So I've had tomatoes, which I've turned to my Greek salad. I have green peppers. I have quite a few jalapenos back there, basil, rosemary. I've grown potatoes that I've used, cucumbers, eggplant. What else? I know there's more. Mint, cilantro. I'm probably forgetting a few other things, but I'm just proud of just my green thumb and something that's so dumb that I didn't think that I would do. But now I'm embracing eating from the land and something that I want to continue onward and teach people what I've learned, that you could be absolutely dumb and planting and become a successful gardener overnight. So
look at you, Corey, a gardener. That is amazing. I'm gonna come in and get some tips for you on how to grow a garden, because I'm also a plant killer myself. My mother's actually the plant lover, and I've always wanted to, you know, to know how to, you know, grow fruits and vegetables. To hear you actually tell that story and the success of your garden, and now I'm highly encouraged to learn more.
Yes. So again, with that, I know we've had two long episodes for you, longer than usual, but you guys are worth it. Some great topics. And, you know, final words, Yesenia, because let's get out of here.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you all so very much for listening to our two episode doubleheader, both volume 26 and volume 27, aka episode 2 and number 3. Don't forget, all of these episodes are accessible across major podcasting mediums. Listen, share, subscribe, and follow us on Market or Pitch at Twitter and Instagram, and as well as YouTube now. And finally, happy Thanksgiving to our entire Marketer Pitch community, both domestic and internationally. Thank you all so very much to listen to us. And we very much look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks time for volume 28, AKA episode 4.
Woo woo. Bye, you guys. Have a great one.
Bye.